Coming up on Golf Today, Jon Rahm headlines the field in Spain on the DP World Tour, chasing a record held by Seve and looking to end 2022 with a big win and big mo. And Sin City welcomes the PGA Tour's best, tempting them at the tables and TPC Summerlin. Who will hit blackjack and who will bust at the Shriners Children's Open? And some weekend winners stopped by the program after six-year waits. Charlie Hull of England putting the lights out. Mackenzie Hughes of Canada hitting the golf ball very, very hard. It's a Wednesday for winners on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. I'm liking this week, Eamon, very, very much. We already visited Roma, Italy this week. And today, in fact, we're going to Madrid, pal.
Another beautiful city. And there's a lot of history on this one as well, because while the Spanish Open dates back all the way to 1912, when the European Tour was formally founded in 1972, 50 years ago, this was the first tournament ever played under the European Tour umbrella when Antonio Garrido was your winner.
How about that? Some great history from Aim. Let's kick things off with the DP World Tour. Spanish Open gets underway tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. The National Championship of Spain began, as Eamon said, 1912 has been a part of the DP World Tour schedule since the tour began in 1972. Notable past champs in the field. Seve Ballesteros, of course, won it three times. You know, this is the record that Jon Rahm is trying to catch this week. Some great past champs. Seve, Sergio, Miguel Jimenez, Peter Thompson, Arnold Palmer, who won in 1975, most recent American to win. Rafa was runner-up in 2019 to Jon Rahm, the defending champ. Speaking of Jon Rahm, let's hone in on the world number six. His history in this event, 2018, made six birdies in his final round to pick up his first pro win in his home country. And the victory marked the third on the DP World Tour for the then 23-year-old. Following year, Rahm defended his title and with that beat Seve's record for fastest Spaniard to reach five DP World Tour wins. Ahead of his start this week, Rahm was asked what it would mean to join Seve as the only players to win this event three times.
Luckily for me, I've been able to join, put my name on that trophy a couple times. And with something that special, I would love to match Seve's record of being the Spanish player to win it three times, right? So it would be a very important Sunday if I were able to do that.
This week's event, we are pleased to be joined by Incy Mehmet of Sky Sports, who joins us live from Madrid. I'm jealous. Incy, we know Jon Rahm is among the biggest names in the game in the United States, but how would you describe his star power in Spain and the reception he's received there?
It's absolutely amazing, Damon. I was listening to him earlier this week, and he was talking about, as a Spanish player, he very much feels like it's his duty to give back to his community and to his people, in fact, because he knows what it's like to be that young junior golfer aspiring to be one of the best players in the world, which of course he is. It may feel like a local event to some, but it's a global stage now. And to give back in that sense and demonstrate what we can do as golfers and also put on a show, put on a Spanish show on home soil as well. It's such a special week. I'm sure Jon Rahm's going to absolutely love it. Madrid is a beautiful city, to say the least. We all know that the food, the sport, and all that sort of culture is fantastic out here, and to say the least, the weather too. So it's a real treat to be out here in Madrid.
Incy, there have been three straight Spanish winners here of the Spanish Open, Jon Rahm twice and then last year Rafa Cabrera-Bello. Do you have any sense from Rahm what kind of form he's in coming into this week? Because he did finish second a few weeks ago at Wentworth to Shane Lowry, but before that, for several months, he hadn't really been showing much form at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a good point. I was actually walking, doing the on-course commentary at the BMW, and so I was had the front row seat, essentially, to watch him play. And it didn't actually necessarily feel like his A game. And I've seen that recently, even when he played in Scotland. He hit some great shots, but maybe even his course management didn't seem in top form. And it's incredible to see the numbers around the greens. He struggled massively, I would say, this year in general. And that's a kind of statistic that's gone downhill. However, with that being said, it's been improving in more kind of recent tournaments. And yeah, I think he's such a powerful player. The most incredible thing is how short that swing is, yet so compact and powerful. I think, and I hope that we're going to start seeing the best of John Rahm, and let's see what that kind of Spanish energy can bring out of his game too.
Speaking of Spanish energy, NC, Sergio Garcia, a past champion, not in the field this week. He's competing for LIV Golf in Thailand. I'm just curious how much Sergio's name has come up either among players or in media circles about Sergio and his place in the game.
Yeah, I think I've spoken to a couple of players today at the golf club just to get a feel for what the vibe's like. And the vibe is good. It's very much focused on the Spanish Open tournament here. I would say that generic LIV chat is pretty much non-existent, I would say, so far this week. With that being said, obviously, Sergio Garcia not playing here, instead competing in Thailand, I would say doesn't look great. You know, John Rahm is here. However, it is also not a tournament that he has appeared on significantly in the past. So it's not a tournament he's played often. Kind of throughout his, I would say, his career. So I'm equally not surprised. It just feels like a shame, because whenever you have these superstars playing in a tournament, A, it does so much for the fans, not only for golf, but the local community, the Spanish people, aspiring golfers as well, which I've touched upon earlier. It's an opportunity to give back, and I would say it's a shame to not see him here.
And see, it's been a month since the Ryder Cup qualification process began for the European team for Rome next year. And if you're Luke Donald, it's been a pretty good month, you know, with Shane Lowry winning, Guido Migliozzi winning, Bob McIntyre winning. Do you sense that there is an awareness of the Ryder Cup starting to pick up among the players on the DP World Tour right now?
Absolutely. I gave this a good thought with myself, and you know, obviously I would never be a captain, but if you were a captain, what would you rather? Would you want LIV players in your team? And on the one hand, part of me feels as though, okay, I just want to win the Ryder Cup and I want the best players on my team, whoever that may be. On the other hand, you know, you've also got to look into what the Ryder Cup is really all about. It's that camaraderie. It's that team and sportsmanship, isn't it? And if there's that natural bit of I don't know what that word is, grudge or whatever it is, or you know, there's no that kind of team bond, I think that would be a real issue. So you've got to also weigh that up in, okay, with that being said, what would the best team look like? And of course, we know that the LIV players, they don't have world ranking points at the moment. So that's going to be an issue for them. So it'll be interesting to see with the new selection process of six captain picks, what this team is going to look like. And I would say so far, I think it's looking really quite strong, to be honest.
Fascinating time in the game. A lot of unknowns. Incy, thanks for hopping on with us. Enjoy some paella, maybe Rioja, some football, and definitely some golf. And we'll speak to you soon.
Absolutely, to say the least. Thanks so much, guys.
And John Rahm will tee off 3:30 a.m. Eastern Thursday. We'll have highlights later on Golf Today in case you're sleeping at that time. Eamon, not a lot of highlights for John Rahm, I would say, in 2022.
I suppose it's a sign of the high bar that John Rahm is judged against that he's actually had a win this year. He was world number one as recently as the Players' Championship, and yet this year is considered something of a disappointment for him. And I'm guessing by John Rahm's standards that he applies to himself, it is. And there's been a lot going on. You know, he's added a second young child to his family. That's always a disruptive influence in terms of the ability to focus on one's career. But you know, he's fallen down to number six in the official world golf rankings now. And when you start to look for reasons why and you look through his statistical profile, it really does lead you to one area, because he's still number one on the PGA Tour in strokes gained off the tee. It hasn't really changed significantly in terms of approach or his putting, but around the greens, it's significantly worse. He was 42nd on tour in strokes gained around the green last year. He was 143rd in the season that has just closed out. And that's, to me, where the damage has been done to Jon Rahm right now. It's not a significant edge. I mean, it's not as though he's dropped massively in performance or in scoring average or anything like that, but it's just enough to make the difference given who he's going up against.
Scoring average is similar. Strokes gained tee to green, similar. Strokes gained total, similar. What has been different, though, has been his performance in the major championships. And Rahm will tell you, as he said in Wentworth, hey, I'm playing pretty well. I'm just not posting the scores. Well, specifically, not posting the scores in the majors. Look at 2021. Four finishes in the top 10, including victory at Torrey Pines. This year, not a top 10 to be found in the majors. The hardest tests, the tests you would think, Eamon, that fit his game best.
Yeah, he's consistent but unspectacular. It's not as though he's missing cuts and slamming the trunk on Friday afternoon. Right. He's just not putting himself in the mix at all. And because he was so solid in 2021, that set expectations so high. And when we entered this year, he was still number one in the world. And, you know, there was a lot of talk that he'd been kind of unfairly denied a victory at the Memorial with the COVID issue a couple of years ago. And this whole idea that he's not winning as often as a guy with that talent and that status in the world of golf ought to. And that's just simply true. He's won once this year. Well, he won once the year before that as well. So it's not as though he was sort of storming away and separating himself from the pack. But if you're going to set a reset button on your Jon Rahm, this is the week you want to do it. There are only two players in the top 50 in the official world golf ranking who are in the field this week in Madrid. Jon Rahm at number 6 and Tommy Fleetwood at number 30. So this is a week you would expect Jon Rahm to put himself in the mix by Sunday. And one would assume Jon Rahm expects to put himself in the mix. He has won on this course before.
He has, and he's also very aware of what's at stake for him in terms of the history of Spanish golf and a chance to tie Seve with 3 wins in the Spanish Open. We've seen him throughout his young career talk about opportunities when Seve's name is on a history book or Jack Nicklaus's name is in a record book. Like, he's aware of those types of things, Eamon, and I think they motivate him as well. I walked away from Whistling Straits feeling he was the best player in the world and that it wasn't even close. That's why seeing him now at number 6 in the world, you may not think that's a precipitous drop. I think for his talent level, for what he's capable of and what he has shown us from week to week at times, I think it feels like a pretty big drop.
It's noticeable.
Yeah.
But what's also noticeable is listening to his comments earlier about what it means to him in this event. That will have been registered in Pontevedra Beach as well, because Jon Rahm's been quite vocal about his desire to continue supporting DP World Tour events, specifically events in Spain that he has historically played in the fall throughout his career. So as we move towards this new PGA Tour vision, which involves the top players committing to 20 tournaments, typically between January and basically Labor Day, then guys like Jon Rahm are going to feel exhausted or depleted by the time they start to want to support events in Europe. So he may be the one reason why that criteria becomes somewhat with caveats at some point, where there's a carve-out where you play a minimum number of those events, because Jon Rahm's determination to continue playing in Spain isn't going anywhere.
You got that right. His determination to win this week with Seve's name at stake, with the field not necessarily as strong, I think Jon Rahm will send a message this week in Madrid.
Speaking of winning, not everyone is guaranteed to leave Las Vegas with money, unless your name is Patrick Cantlay. He's one of the favourites this week at the Shriners, but there are a handful of President's Cup standouts hoping to cash in as well. We'll have more right after the break.
Notre Dame football there this weekend, and this week the PGA Tour heads to Vegas, TPC Summerlin. 40th playing of the Shriners Children's Open. Coverage gets underway tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. Take a look at the last 5 champions of the event. Got to think there's a UCLA Bruin. There he is, Patrick Cantlay, getting it done. 2017, DeChambeau, Kevin Na, Martin Laird, and Sung J.M., defending champion. Take a look back at 2017. Patrick Cantlay, world number 4, his history in the event. Beat Alex Cheka and Wee Kim with a par in the second playoff hole for victory in his first appearance. Talk about a strong record in Las Vegas. 4 starts, a win, couple of runner-ups. Every single start with a finish inside the top 10. And speaking of 10, there are 10 players in the field at the Shriners that competed at the 2022 President's Cup at Quail Hollow, including Patrick Cantlay. He and teammate Max Homa represented the U.S., while defending champion Sung J.M., Christian Bezuidenhout, Cam Davis, Tom Kim, Siwoo Kim, K.H. Lee, Taylor Pendrith, and Mito Pereira competed for the international team. And the 20-year-old Tom Kim standing by with Amy Rogers.
Tom, well, you become a sort of a celebrity of sorts over these last few weeks. Team not finding victory at the President's Cup, but you certainly earned a lot of fans. What have the last few weeks been like for you since the President's Cup?
It's been a little tiring, I'm not going to lie. A lot of energy went out, but it's amazing how the week went, and obviously it would have been great if we won the Cup, but we fell a little short. But, you know, the team, you know, we did our best, so that's something that I'm really proud of, and definitely a big, big memory for me.
Although it's a different format, you know, obviously playing with a teammate, what do you feel like you can learn from an event like that that translates, that you can use out here week to week on the PGA Tour?
It's the first time for me that I didn't really play for myself. I played for everyone else. And on Saturday, like on 18 for me, instead of making that putt for myself, I had the whole team watching. So it definitely made me, it got me more motivated than regular events. And I think I can kind of use that as an individual, because it is an individual sport, but there's so many behind-the-scenes work that you do with your team that I can feel I can interchannel more and use that to my advantage.
As you begin a new season now on the PGA Tour, what are your goals as you look ahead to this season?
I just got to learn. I think that's the first thing. I'm not a rookie this year, but I feel I kind of am, because I haven't played a lot of courses, and I feel like I got to get a lot more experience under my belt, so stuff like that. But I'm just excited to be out here. I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, you've been fun to watch. We're excited to see what you do in the weeks and months to come. Thanks for the time, Tom.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
One group to keep your eyes on the first two rounds is the grouping of Max Homa, who already has a win this season, Tom Kim coming off that dynamic rookie performance at the President's Cup, as well as his teammate Siwoo Kim. So a bit of a President's Cup grouping here. So let's take you back to the President's Cup, remind you of some of the great things we saw. One of the most electric of the week, undoubtedly, Friday four ball. Homa and Horschel defeating Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith one up. How about that putt for Max Homa, 11-footer, to tie the hole and win the match. Speaking of rookies, maybe the most talked about rookie of the week was 20-year-old breakout star Tom Kim, one of my favorite players in the game. Went 2-3-0 overall, played all five matches, two crucial points. Coming on Saturday, told us he would fist pump, be an Energizer Bunny for his team. He was exactly that and more. How about Siwoo Kim going 3-1-0 on the week, most notably beating Justin Thomas one up and famously on 15, yet shushing the crowd, showing some emotion in his own right. So, Amy, it's time for a little take your pick with these three grouped together in Vegas this week. Who are you going all in on? Because I know who I'm going all in on.
The obvious answer should be Max Homa.
It should.
Since he's hot and he's won. But he's also missed four cuts in five starts on this golf course throughout his career. I think it's the guy we just saw who's got to back up that shushing gesture, which is Siwoo Kim. And it's not as though he has a great deal of history here either. This is his first start of the season. Since the last season ended, he did play one event in Asia. It was top five there. But he's played here five times at TPC Summerlin and has three top 25 finishes. And he's just beaten a guy who's arguably one of the two or three best golfers in the world right now, head-to-head in Justin Thomas. And that's the kind of environment where Justin Thomas is trying his heart out. There's a lot of fieriness and flintiness in that match play scenario for a guy like Justin Thomas. And he faced him down on home turf on the very course where Justin Thomas won his first major championship. Quail Hollow Club. So to me, he's the guy riding the momentum this week. He's the guy I look to kind of perform best out of that threesome.
Such a great point you make. He can be inconsistent when he is playing well. He wins players' championships. Yeah. He takes out Justin Thomas. We've also seen him from time to time be inconsistent. But my gosh, he was focused in Charlotte and was so fun to watch. But I can't go there with you. I'm going with his countryman, the 20-year-old Tom Kim. I was on the train early, as you know, end of the 2022 season. 11 starts, three top tens, the victory at the Wyndham, the terrific debut in the President's Cup. My one concern is that he could be a little bit fatigued. When we spoke to him after the President's Cup, I mean, he looked like a wreck. Hearing him now with Amy, he still doesn't look like he's got all of his energy back from that remarkably tiring week in Charlotte as he tried to put the international team on his shoulders. But I just think this kid is special. He hits fairways. He makes putts. His attitude is a 15th club. And I think that he will continue to play well on golf courses, which he says, Eamon, he's still getting to know.
What leans toward him in Vegas is that it's a town for showmen. And he proved that he's a showman. But come on here, Damon. He just said he's tired. The President's Cup was 10 days ago. He's not even old enough to drink. He doesn't have the excuse of a hangover. So the fatigue argument when you're 20 years old and you can't drink doesn't quite hold up 10 days later.
I tell you what, I was doing featured group coverage during the Wyndham. He made a quadruple bogey on the first hole and won the golf tournament running away. That told me more than I needed to know about this kid. He is special. He is different. He's still got a night to sleep off all of the fun and all the energy draining that went on in Charlotte. I believe he will bring his best. I just think he's special. We've talked about it. I feel like I've seen it coming. He's different. He brings a lot of attitude. He brings a lot of joy to the game. And at this point, and you know, it may not be the same at age 30. You know, the Spieth, age 21, you know, Lydia Ko is a teenager. Yeah. Padraig Harrington has talked about the loss of innocence at some point. Right now, he is in the sweet spot, Tom Kim, of innocence.
And you've got to enjoy it, and it's easy to enjoy it as a spectator as well. There's a certain effervescence that he plays golf with that he still, he loves it. He loves the learning process. He loves the highs. He loves the lows of it as well. He is definitely, to me, the breakout star of last season on the PGA Tour. What we just saw in the President's Cup, it's tantalizing for what he could become as an engaging character, because you don't get guys from other teams wandering out on the first tee in the United States against the United States wearing shades and kind of egging the crowd on and getting a warm reception while doing it. And that's the key. He was getting a warm reception because he's an endearing character. Yeah. Crowds love him. And I hope he delivers some this week, at least in the early part of the season, to build on the momentum that he's already got.
Feels like a special player. Feels like he's just getting started. We're just getting started on this Wednesday. Stay right here on the other side of the break. We're joined by the latest champion on the LPGA Tour. That's Charlie Hull of England. She returned to the winner's circle on Sunday after breaking a six-year win drought and fills us in on all the details of her important win. Back on golf today. On Sunday, it was Charlie Hull back in the winner's circle on the LPGA Tour. For the first time in 6 years, Hull made a par on the 72nd hole to hold on for a one-shot win in Texas. Her last win came at the 2016 CME Group Tour Championship.
And with that victory, Charlie Hull became only the sixth player from England with multiple LPGA Tour victories. She's got three on the Ladies European Tour to go along with that. Former Rookie of the Year on the LAT and won the Order of Merit on that tour 1 year later, five times Solheim Cupper, and also an Olympian. And we're pleased now to be joined by Charlie Hull. Charlie, congratulations on the win. You've been playing pretty solid golf recently. You tied third at the Evian. You were fifth the week before you won. What made the difference last week for you?
I'm not too sure, really. I just felt like my game's been in a good place this year. And I just went out there and had fun. Been working on quite a few things with my coaches and that. And to be fair, like, in the 2 weeks that I had off before them few weeks, I was just working a lot and it all come together.
Charlie, 6 years is a long time. The folks at home might wonder, how'd you stay out of your own way on Sunday, remain in the present and not want it so badly that it negatively affected you?
Well, I've been playing a lot of golf when I've been at home. I've been playing sometimes like 36 holes a day and I've been shooting some low scores. So I just kind of took that confidence out onto the into the tournaments with me. And I just think it's no different, really, shooting low scores with you when you're with your mates at home to playing on tour. So once I was in the lead on Sunday, I just was making some good birdies out there and just kind of felt in cruise control and was just enjoying it.
Charlie, you won a couple of times on the Ladies European Tour between the LPGA victory, so it's not as though it was an entirely barren spell. But what was your impatience level like between those two victories on the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, well, I've come close a couple of times and I just don't get it finished off on a Sunday or have a low one on a Sunday. I've been like thereabouts. So I felt like leading into the weekend and especially into the Sunday, I thought, you know what, I'm going to get it done. Here's the time. So I took advantage of it. But I think definitely it is just a few shots here and there and being confident with your putter. And last week I was.
Speaking of putting, Charlie, now I read this quote. You called putting the most boring part of practice, but you've been grinding on that part of the game. So what did you find?
Well, when I was at home, I was working on a lot of, like, seeing the line. So I would read the break, and then I'd put a tee peg where I see the break, and I was really, really, like, looking down that line with my coach, seeing if I'm aiming there. Because on right-to-left putts, I aim almost too far right, so aim too much break. And same on left-to-right, so I over-aim because I hate missing on the low side of the hole. So I found out I just got to really commit to a line and have the right aim, and was working that a lot, and I seem to just, it's helped me a lot with my putting.
Charlie, you've also in the past said that golf is boring unless you're shooting at pins, which that aggression kind of paid off for you this week. But is it tough to play that kind of golf, if that's your natural golf, when the confidence isn't there to back it up?
Not really, no, because I felt like as well I've been practicing a lot of my chipping over the last few years. So when I miss a green, I feel like I have my short game to back it up. But it's just usually when I'm going for them pins, what lets me down sometimes is I don't hold the putt. And then if I miss the green, I hit a good chip and I don't hold the putt back. So since I've been working my putting, this is when I've been shooting lower scores. And I just enjoy going for pins. Like, I don't really do anything else. I just like making birdies because I do lose my concentration quite quickly on the golf course. So I've been working on that as well.
Making birdies, that makes you such a tough out in the Solheim Cup.
I know.
That's when I first saw you, by the way. 2013, you were 17 years old. You beat Paula Creamer in singles. Asked her for an autograph for your buddy, one of the cool moments in the game. How have you dealt with being in the public eye for so long? Expectations, pressure, everything that goes along with being a professional athlete?
Yeah, it is hard because everyone's like, oh, when are you going to win? Or when are you going to win next? Or you're so close. Or why didn't you hold that putt? Or it's just so many little things. And at the end of the day, I just look at it as being a sport, and I'm out there to have fun. And I'm kind of feel like my game has matured over the last year, and now it's coming all together with my mindset. At the end of the day, you're a sports person, you've got to deal with like negativity, and you just got to go out there and play your own game. And that's what I done last week, and I felt like it was all good. It came together.
And I guess patience is something that comes with age 100%. As well, Charlie. When we saw you break out at such a young age in the Solheim Cup, and then you got off to a rousing start with the LET performances as well, did you expect the success and the victories to come quick and fast? And what was it like to adapt to the fact that the real world isn't that easy, I guess?
I know, exactly. You kind of get frustrated. So when I got my first win on the LPGA Tour in 2016, it was the last tournament of the season. And I almost wished it was like I had a few more tournaments left so I could have played on that confidence instead of having 2 months off over Christmas. So now I feel like I've got a couple events left of the season. I can take that confidence roll into the next few. And it really is all mindset, I think. With like 6 holes left to play, I thought to myself, I could play away from pins because I was 3 shots ahead, but I thought, no, I'm just going to go straight at them. And it's being confident, and I knew I could hit them shots under the pressure, and I did. And I like pressure. It's fun. Like when she held that putt for eagle on the 17th, like I didn't think, oh no, I think, great, I love that. Like now coming down the last hole with 1 shot ahead, like I like the feeling of the pressure. So yeah, it's good when you execute it as well under pressure.
Love that. Bring it on, bring it on. Now, Charlie, I've been told that professional athletes, they need like a secondary passion, so it's not always focused on your respective sport. We're finding you in your kitchen right now. Is cooking a secondary passion or fishing? What's your secondary passion outside of golf?
I like shopping, but I wouldn't say that's a good passion. But I don't know, I have some little projects going on. I've got some land that I'm building some houses on, so me and my dad are, you know, just concentrating on that at the minute. So it's kind of fun, some little projects. But I do like cooking as well, and I am a good cook.
Oh, fantastic. Well, the kitchen looks great. Eamon and I were talking about it with you during the break. Congratulations on the big win in Texas. We'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, guys. I appreciate it. See you later.
Well, from one weekend winner to another, Mackenzie Hughes also just ended a 6-year drought with a victory at the Sanderson Farms Championship. The champ will be with us when we come back.
Thank you.
Mackenzie Hughes might have missed out on the President's Cup played in his adopted hometown of Charlotte, but he bounced back in style at the weekend, winning his second PGA Tour event in a dramatic playoff. The Pride of Canada will be here to tell us how he got it done after a six-year drought. And the LPGA Tour's Player of the Year race is still wide open, but that should that honour be decided by points or by votes? We got a difference of opinion on that one, and we're going to look back, way back, this Wednesday. 26 years to be exact, all the way back to the first of Tiger's 82 PGA Tour wins. Golf Today continues right now.
Golf Today.
Golf Today continues on Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. We just talked to Charlie Hall, 6 years since her last win. Now we got Mackenzie Hughes, 6 years. He's coming up in just a bit. What does that tell you about the topsy-turvy nature of this game and the patience required to play it?
Just tells you to go to Vegas and bet on sixes this week. Isn't that what everyone's probably going to do out there?
Yeah.
But it just tells you how difficult it is to actually win out there, because we're talking about elite talents in this game, and a six-year winless stretch has really got to wear on both confidence and the psyche of these players. So it's a testament to perseverance, if nothing else, that they can still, you know, get it done.
No doubt about it. We'll speak to Mackenzie Hughes in just a little bit. As you said, the PGA Tour is in Las Vegas this week for the Shriners Children's Open. First round coverage comes your way tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Plenty of President's Cuppers in the field this week, including that UCLA Bruin, Patrick Cantlay, past champ. For more, we join Amy Rogers in Vegas, who spoke with one of the stars of the U.S. team. Hey, Amy.
Hey there, Damon. Well, Patrick Cantlay closed out last season with 5 top tens in his last 6 starts, kept that momentum rolling at the President's Cup, where he has a successful run to help lift the U.S. team to victory. He's now making his season debut here at TPC Summerlin, where he has had quite a bit of success in years past, a winner here in 2017, twice a runner-up, and 8th in 2020. I spoke to him just a few minutes ago about what it is about this course that seems to bring out his best golf.
Yeah, I think the fairways are relatively wide, but you definitely need to play from the fairway here. And in general, I hit a lot of drivers here and hit a lot of fairways, and so I'm able to have a lot of birdie opportunities.
You're coming into this new season off quite a run at the end of last year, 5 top tens in your last 6 starts. What's the key to keeping that momentum rolling?
I think just sticking in my process and staying patient. You know, a week like this where you know it's going to take a lot of birdies. I think if you get off to a stretch where you just make a bunch of pars, you feel like you're losing ground. But as you know, when you're in that stretch, as difficult as it seems, you can rattle them off here one after the other. So staying patient on this golf course is important, and not pressing.
As you begin this new season, what are some of the goals as you look ahead to the weeks and months to come?
I think just, you know, like I said, really sticking to my process and doing all the things that have been working. And so not trying to do anything extra or outside myself, and, you know, sticking to my game plan to each and every golf course and really playing within myself and, you know, carrying that confidence to each and every event.
On a course like this that tends to turn into a birdie fest, what's sort of your game plan that you take to a course like this?
Not much different than a normal golf course. I mean, I try to drive the golf ball in the fairway, stay fairly aggressive. There's usually quite a few accessible hole locations, but occasionally you find a hole location that's tough and you got to respect it. And my, you know, plan around this golf course is to get as many looks as possible, and, you know, you got to make a bunch of birdies if you want to contend.
Patrick Cantlay is one of 10 players who also competed in the President's Cup. He may be having a sense of deja vu as he tees it up here tomorrow. He's grouped with Sung Jae Im, a member of the International President's Cup team, and he is also defending champion here this week.
Amy, another member of the U.S. President's Cup team who had a great week was Max Homa, who's also already won this season. What more can you tell us about him this week? Because he doesn't have a great record at TPC Summerlin.
Yeah, Max Homa, you know, just a few weeks ago was determined to prove that he had earned that spot on the U.S. President's Cup team. He went out and did that, defended his title successfully at the Fortinet Championship, and then goes out and goes undefeated for the U.S. team. I had a chance to speak with him just a few minutes ago about how he would assess where his game is now heading into this week.
Yeah, I mean, it feels good. It's been fun seeing the finish to last season's FedEx Cup kind of roll into this season. The game's just been getting better. That's all I really care about. So it's been cool to see the results to that. But, yeah, I've just been working hard, and I feel like I'm working on the right things, which is a good blend.
What are some of those things that you're starting to see come together that you're working on with your game?
My short game, finally, I found it last summer. I've been looking for a couple of years, but I finally found that. So that's limited a lot of, you know, if you do make a bad swing or you play a par five, it just makes golf feel a little bit easier, keeps momentum going. And then just the other little stuff, just wedge place, keep a focus on that. I've been driving the ball well, and even just little like statistic stuff. But I've, you know, big change too has been nice. Been working with Phil Kenyon for the better part of the last, you know, 6 months, 7 months. So that's been fun getting to learn how to be a better putter. That always helps. So I just feel like I'm trying to raise my floor as high as I can, and I feel like that's all helping.
Coming off the success that you had at the President's Cup, how do you translate that into success out here week in and week out?
Having a good plan, I think, not getting too off course, not getting overly frustrated with maybe, you know, a couple hours a day at the tournament of maybe not feeling perfect. You know, it's there's gonna be ebbs and flows this season, even when you play great. So you just have to kind of stay the course, trust in like kind of your process and what you've kind of found to work. And even on weeks where it might not be perfect, you can kind of figure out a way to get in the hole. And I think that's kind of what I've been trying to do for a while. And obviously, you know, I'm not going to win every golf tournament, but at least I know that the plan does work.
TPC Summerlin has been a challenge for you in years past. What do you feel like you need to do differently to play well here this week?
Oh, man. Make less mistakes and make more birdies. I haven't really played well coming into this week much, so it's nice to feel much better about my golf game. But I like the golf course. I moved to the desert as of late, and you know, a few years ago in Scottsdale, so I'm getting used to playing within the rocks. So maybe that'll be the boost. But I have a feeling I'll play a little better than I have the last couple of times here.
Homa has missed the cut here at TPC Summerlin in his last four starts, but is obviously playing some incredible golf coming in. And as he mentioned, is happy to not be working through some swing changes which had plagued him as he arrived at this event in years past. Guys?
Amy, catching up with a couple of Pac-12 legends. I appreciate that. Let's take a closer look at this group. Max Homa, Tom Kim, Siwoo Kim, three of the notables from the President's Cup just completed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Amon Lynch, and just looking at these players, I mean, we often talk about, you know, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, the stars of the modern game. How important is it that we're kind of being introduced to some new stars like a Max Homa and a Tom Kim?
You always want that pipeline to be flowing. Folly, It certainly seems to be doing so right now. It's interesting that, you know, Jordan Spieth was never a social media star. He wisely avoided social media. Justin Thomas dips in occasionally, but Max Homa was a star in the world of golf before his game backed it up, because he's such an engaging presence on social media. We saw how Tom Kim is a similarly engaging guy between what he did at the Wyndham and then obviously during the President's Cup as well. So it's a new generation that isn't necessarily dependent purely on results. They are characters, and this is a soap opera that moves around from week to week to a different stage. So you kind of want those characters built up. And we do seem to have a kind of a new influx of them these days. We got rid of some of the old ones, and we've got some of the new ones coming in.
For those who don't know, I mean, Max Homa would actually break down the golf swings of 20 handicappers on Twitter. Not everyone is on Twitter, but that's what you're talking about, kind of how notable he became on social media, Instagram, on Twitter, because he was so willing to be, I'm on a tarmac, I'm on my way to a PGA Tour event, send me some golf swings. He would actually mostly making fun of the 20 handicap swings and why not, but also every now and then dispensing some real world advice.
Yeah, and you know, there's a gift to doing savage humor with a sort of a gentle nudge to the ribs rather than an uppercut, and that's what Max Homa does. It's very engaging. People willingly wanted to be part of the Max Homa show. And now it's so interesting to see a guy who's finally developed the confidence to go with the talent that he's clearly had for a long time. Because what you saw from him at Quail Hollow at the President's Cup was not a guy who had doubts as to whether or not he belonged on that team. That's why he went 4-0 for the week.
No question about it. From new stars to maybe the greatest star of all, way back Wednesday time, 1996, it was Tiger Woods who won his first professional event in this Las Vegas Invitational, as it was known. Tiger defeating Davis Love III in the playoff. Won a cool $297,000 while punching his ticket to the Masters in 1997. What happened there? He won by 12. There's Tiger Woods. I mean, no one even had any idea what was coming, except for maybe him.
No, it's kind of interesting to look at Davis Love there shaking his hand. Davis, you know, one of the premier players in the world at that time. And the idea that this was going to be number one of what has turned out to be, as of now, 82 PGA Tour victories. I mean, it's been a remarkable journey since then. And it's not as though he was an unknown quantity. He'd won the US Amateur three straight years before that, and then the Junior for three straight years before that. So he was talked about, and this didn't come that long after the Hello World moment when he introduced himself in Milwaukee. But I don't think people expected him to win as early as he did. And then after that, he just went on an absolute tear.
He did, and that Masters win by 12 in 97. I mean, then there was like, well, the U.S. Open, maybe he hits a little too crooked for that. And then he goes to Pebble Beach in 2000 and wins by 15. Bethpage Black adds another one, 2002. 2008 wins at Torrey Pines. So even along the way, even looking back now in retrospect of maybe the greatest of all time, one of two, one of three, you may be a Jack or a Hogan, you know, devotee. But even along the way, there were doubters that maybe this wasn't going to be the real deal to the extent that it ended up to be.
It's hard to predict the idea that somebody is going to come out and become, you know, the guy who ties Sam Snead records, the guy who walks past Jack's records, at least as it relates to PGA Tour victories. And people still kind of unfairly on social media make fun of that old Curtis Strange interview where Tiger famously said, you know, second place sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm only here to win. And Curtis kind of laughed at him and said, you learn. And because Curtis is going by the standard of mortals. And that's what we had dealt with for so long. But what Tiger Woods did from that point onwards in his career kind of broke every perception of what a talent ought to do. And guys still suffer from it today. When you talk about the pressure that a Jon Rahm feels or a Rory McIlroy feels or Scottie Scheffler, that's based on what the best players in the world ought to do week in, week out, without a bad week. And that's because Tiger Woods set that bar, because Tiger didn't have bad weeks. He set that bar that everyone else, even now as he's kind of in the autumn of his career, what he did is still impacting the generation that came after him. He impoverished the generation that he had to play against, but he's definitely still having a lasting impact on the guys who've come after him.
An impossible standard to uphold, but still setting the table for the modern player, including players like Mackenzie Hughes. Let's go back to Sunday, Sanderson Farms. This was in regulation after that great shot through the trees. This is his third shot. This is a long lag putt. Eamon, how much quality was in this shot right here?
This is why Mackenzie Hughes is top 15 on the PGA Tour in putting for the last 3 years. That's the touch of an artist right there.
Absolutely able to save par, a little hat tip there, into the playoff we go. This is the second playoff hole now. His approach shot as the sun is going down.
So you know the eyes are going straight up and straight down. You know he likes it.
How about that? The aperture of the camera wide open, as they say in the business. Able to stick that to about 8 feet or so. And I just love that he starts the celebration before the ball goes in.
That's a guy with belief.
Guy who waited a long, long time, nearly 6 years. That second win on the PGA Tour. Getting the better of Sepp Straka. Really enjoyed this win, in particular because his family was with him here, taking to Twitter. Thankful my family could be there to celebrate with me. Had to wait a little longer than I'd hoped for win number two, but it was worth the wait. And Mackenzie joins us now on this Wednesday. Matt, congratulations. You won your first event in like your seventh PGA Tour start and then waited 2,142 days for the next one. What's the mental journey been like for you?
Yeah, it's been fun. I've had some great years in the PGA Tour, but you know, ultimately you play this game to win, and we don't get to do it very often. So super excited to get the win last week at Sanderson Farms, and trying to get back there as soon as possible.
Mackenzie, you said you've had great years on the PGA Tour. It's not as though you were in a desert here. It's only 1 year since that first victory where you didn't make the FedEx Cup playoffs. So you've played consistently. What was the patience level like? Did you find yourself overreaching trying to get that second win?
Yeah, there were times I think that, you know, the patience was tested. And, you know, even after my rookie year, the 1 year I missed the playoffs, I kind of went on a path to try and get better. I just missed the Tour Championship, and I tried to get a lot better really quickly, and that was to my detriment. So I've learned a lot being on the PGA Tour the last 6-7 years, and certainly patience is one of those things. You need to be within yourself and playing your own game, and yeah. To wait for this one 6 years was a lot longer than I had hoped for, but I'm learning a lot and think my best years are ahead of me.
Well, you are playing your own game, but you've also added some speed training to your routine, flying that bunker on five with ease, for example, at the Sanderson. I saw a video of you on Maui in 2021 hitting tee shots with Bryson DeChambeau, giving you swing advice. What did you gain from that conversation and from speed training as a whole?
Well, I think it's no secret to anyone now that speed and distance are a big part of this game, and I'm well aware of that, and something that I think I have plenty of in the tank. So it really just requires some hard work and discipline, and you know, I've obviously seen guys doing it before me, most notably Bryson, and yeah, there's no secret to it. You need to hit golf balls really, really hard, more often than you think, and be in the gym, and that's what I've been doing. So the plan is to keep pushing forward with that and try and add as much speed as possible.
Getting this victory so early in the season, Mackenzie, what does that do in terms of changing or resetting your goals for the rest of the season?
Yeah, the goals do shift a little bit, you know, but my goal coming into the season was to get a win, and I've already accomplished that. So. Again, and you know, you always want to make it to East Lake in the Tour Championship, but yeah, sitting at number one in the FedEx Cup right now, it makes you think a little bit even higher, and you know, I think I'm good enough to keep playing really well and to keep my name up in that upper echelon of the FedEx Cup for a long time. So we'll just keep trying to work really hard and play well, and I know the expectation level for myself will be higher, but I'll try and keep that in check and just keep working on the right things, and hopefully we'll be back in the winner's circle again this season.
Mackenzie, as a Canadian, what's the push going to be like to represent the international team in Canada in 2024? Corey's going to want to be there. Taylor's going to want to be there. Will Bateman, who joined you as a Fortinet Cup winner. I mean, it's going to be a very serious push for Canadians to be on that squad, most likely captained by Mike Weir.
Yeah, that one will be up on the importance scale for me, and a huge goal of mine in the next couple of years. I know the captain will likely be who I think it is. So, yeah, just really excited for that one. Montreal will be a ton of fun, especially for the international side. Just having the Canadians behind us would be really cool. So, you know, it's going to take a lot of hard work, and unfortunately, I don't think my win counts for any of those points, but certainly got a lot of confidence from that win, and, you know, I'll keep using that to hopefully qualify for that top eight and not have to rely on a captain's pick next time.
The win might not count, but your memory counts. 2007, you're 16 years of age. Mike Weir defeats Tiger in singles in the President's Cup in Canada. Where were you that day? What do you remember about one of the great moments in Canadian golf?
Yeah, I mean, Mike was so good and had so many good years there that it really wasn't a surprise to any of the Canadian golf fans. Certainly the world was put on notice there that, you know, Mike Weir was, you know, a world beater, and he'd already won the Masters and was a major champion. But to take down Tiger in the President's Cup in singles was a big deal. And I don't actually remember where I was at the time, but I know that, you know, that was a big deal for Canadian golf fans and for me. And, you know, Mike's a big reason why I'm, you know, where I am today.
Mackenzie, let's go back to the summer of last year. Torrey Pines, you held the lead through three rounds at the US Open. You ended up tied for 15th. What did you take away from that experience of being in that position in a major championship?
That was a big learning moment for me. I really did feel like I was ready. I know I'd never been in that position before, but felt like I could do it, believed in myself, and ultimately I didn't get it done, but I got off to a slow start that day, and then I was able to fight back, and then a really unfortunate break there on 11, get my ball stuck in the tree there. So, but, you know, I proved to myself that my game as it is good enough to compete with the best in the world, and I was kind of nine holes away from winning a U.S. Open. So gained a lot of confidence from that experience, and then went to my next major championship at the Open and finished sixth. So definitely use that as a bit of a springboard, and feel like that's kind of the progression I'd like to follow, is kind of win some regular tournaments and then start contending in majors. And hopefully my ultimate goal is to win one of those too.
Well, you weren't on this International President's Cup team. You know the fellas, Taylor, Corey, you know those guys. From afar, as a viewer, as a pro golfer who wanted to be in Charlotte, in what ways did Trevor elevate the President's Cup, even in defeat, with his passion and clarity as captain?
Yeah, I still feel like there's good momentum for the international side. I know the results don't dictate that, but I think that the last, you know, a few President's Cups have been competitive and close. Australia, I hate to say they should have won, but they really had that one, and the U.S. side made a late kind of heroic comeback to snag that one. But I'd really love to see that that script flipped a little bit and the international side to get one or two, because I still think it's a compelling competition and a fun event, but it's been pretty one-sided so far. And but I do think that the new logo and the new shield that, you know, Ernie came up with is a great start. And it's just it's a really tough opponent to go up against. The U.S. side is, you know, really tough, and I don't know if they had a guy ranked outside of the top 20 in the world. So pretty tough to go up against that. But I think one of these cups coming up soon will go in our direction.
Mackenzie, in your 7 years on the PGA Tour, you've averaged about 10 missed cuts a year. I'm curious if greater consistency is something you aim for, or is the modern game more about being completely opportunistic and maximizing that on the weeks where everything is synced up and you're playing well?
No, I definitely would like to be more consistent. I think that I'm working with a new coach now, Josh Gregory, and the goal is to be a bit more consistent. I'd like to reduce that number significantly, and I think I can do that. I can be a consistent player. It's just a small bit of fine tuning here and there, but yeah, that's a number that I don't like to hear. But you know, that's the reality of my situation with the last 6 years. And I would still take, you know, missing, you know, 15 cuts and winning once every year, but I would like to win once every year and definitely reduce the number of missed cuts. So consistency is definitely a goal of mine. And you want to be up there. I mean, I look at the best players in the world, Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy and those guys, they don't really miss very many cuts. And that's the direction I'd like to trend towards.
Mackenzie, congrats on win number two. Keep shredding, working out, swinging hard. Make sure you stretch a lot. Stay healthy. We'll speak to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much.
Welcome back to Golf Today. This week, the LPGA Tour rolls on to the West Coast for the LPGA MediHeal Championship. Matilda Castron won the title back in 2021. You can catch first-round coverage tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern right here on Golf Channel. Here are some of the notables in the field.
Yeah, they're also in the hunt for the Rolex Player of the Year. Minji Lee, two wins, including a major. Brooke Henderson, two wins, including a major champ in Ji Chun. I mean, Jennifer Kupcho, if you want to win Player of the Year, you got to ball out. I mean, that's basically how you get it done. So with more on this topic, it's time for a round of Tell Me I'm Wrong. That's Paige McKenzie's segment as we welcome her back. Okay, Paige, we're listening.
Well, I mean, I like the fact that we saw how bunched up it is at the top of this board, which makes me relieved because, tell me I'm wrong, the LPGA Tour has the best Player of the Year determiner, and that is by points. It absolutely does. It takes all the subjectivity out of it. There's no player vote. Players know exactly what they need to do in order to earn the Player of the Year. They know where they stand as they enter this final stretch of the year, which I think provides clarity both for the players and the fans. So tell me I'm wrong. LPGA does it best.
You're not often wrong, Paige, but you're wrong on this one. I think a point system doesn't take into... It doesn't give you context. It doesn't take in the nuance of how you won, the adversity you overcame. And I think sometimes the circumstances aren't necessarily captured by the algorithm approach to this. And you can even see it extend beyond mere performance. You look at what happened in the PGA Tour's Player of the Year vote this year. There wasn't that much of a difference between Scottie Scheffler with 4 wins in the Masters and Cameron Smith with 3 wins, including the Open and the Players. But 89% of the vote went to Scottie Scheffler. There's no way, if Cam Smith hadn't left for LIV, there's no way that's an 89% split. And if it was a point system, it might actually have been a fairly close in the point system. So there's context and nuance that doesn't come in.
I actually completely disagree with you on that point. I actually ran the numbers a couple weeks ago for the Cam Smith and Scottie Scheffler breakdown, and I used the metric of the LPGA point system because Cam Smith won the PGA of America Player of the Year, and they use a point system. However, they only count wins. They do not count other top 10 finishes. So when I ran the metric using the LPGA Tour's top 10 points, Scottie ran away with it. It was actually validating the 89% vote, because they did take into consideration all of the top 10s that he received. Or they would if they used this LPGA system.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, these players on the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour, they should know what determines the best season, the best player, the golf course, the weather, the strength of field, the shots hit, the margin of victory, the context of a season, a major versus an invitational. I think Grant Boone struck on that earlier this week when we spoke to him on Golf Today.
I thought last year that Nelly Korda had the best year of any player in women's golf. She won 4 times, including a major. She also won the Olympic gold medal. That didn't count in the LPGA points race because it wasn't officially an LPGA event. Jin Young Ko won Player of the Year because she won 5 official LPGA events. None of those were majors. Both had great years, but Nelly won, you know, early in the year, middle of the year, late in the year. So as of now, we've got a great race.
And Paige, Nelly won a major last year. Jin Young Ko was kind of like, yeah, I'm not even sure I deserve this because of the year that Nelly had.
Okay, let's break down their year. Okay, Jin Young Ko not only had 5 wins, she also had 13 top 10 finishes. Nelly Korda had 4 wins in a major. Now, when you take into account the point system, LPGA does give double points for majors. She had 4 wins, including that major, and 10 top 10s. So by that metric, it seems very obvious that with Jin Young Ko with 13 top 10s versus Nelly with 10, it makes sense that Jin Young Ko would win LPGA Tour Player of the Year. This is not Women's Golf Player of the Year. The Olympic gold medal is not an LPGA Tour event. So to me, there was no ambiguity as it related to last year. To me, it was pretty cut and dried. And I think that the players may have seen that. My question to you would be, have you seen the players always determine and get it right? You go back to 2010 with Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler in the Rookie of the Year race. Even the Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy Player of the Year 2 years ago, there was controversy as to how that would have shaken out. I don't know if the players always do get it right, because I think those are 2 good examples where maybe they didn't.
I definitely think there's always going to be a personal bias that comes in voting. But I also think that the math doesn't necessarily tick in the nuance. It's not just the winning or the top 10, and it's who you were playing against and whatever adversity you happen to overcome to get there. And I think players, having gone through that themselves, know and can add a little bit of weight. And sometimes you do want to put your thumb on the scale in favour of a particular outcome because you were so impressed with how that player got there. And math doesn't necessarily always just give you that full picture.
Yeah, I want the players to own it. I want to know what is important to them. What do they value? Will they always get it right? That's, you know, that's up to debate, up to opinion, whether they always get it right. But I do think that these are player, you know, dominated entities. They know better than some computer who is the player.
And I would also point out that the LPGA Tour's Hall of Fame uses points to get in there. And I think that is spectacularly wrong in terms of the players who've been excluded over the years.
One last point, because I know we need to move on. We play golf. It's an objective measurement. This isn't figure skating. This isn't gymnastics. There's no measurement. There's no context. It's pretty black and white, and that's our sport. So I actually feel like it's relatively consistent with our sport. And I know not every other sport has point systems, but I think it kind of makes sense with golf.
I thought this was gymnastics today. Is this golf tonight? Oh, no. Okay, let's call a truce. Terrific argument. Paige always brings the goods. All right, folks, news from last night, by the way, and this made me sad because I just enjoyed watching this player, 9-time tour winner and major champ Na-Yun Choi, announced she will retire from golf. Her last LPGA event will be the BMW Ladies Championship later this month. Choi said, quote, "I'd like to pursue my happiness and experience many new things. I want to share my experiences and knowledge to return the love and support that I've been thankfully given," end quote. Take a look at this career. 2012 U.S. Women's Open champ, tied for second in 2010 U.S. Women's Open and the 2013 AIG Women's Open, 9 wins on the LPGA, 80 career LPGA Tour top 10 finishes, 12 of those at majors. Paige, I remember watching her a decade ago and marveling at that golf swing. What did you make of this news?
I actually found the statement itself to be quite illuminating. As a player that has gone through my own highs and lows, it was interesting and I think insightful to hear Na-Yun Choi talk about her own journey and how she had experienced so many highs and lows that the game of golf brings her. I also think it's worth pointing out that she's 35 years old and she turned pro at 16. Like, this isn't a long career to be celebrated. I remember watching, I played in the 2012 U.S. Open that she won. I remember watching it. I teed off early on Saturday morning, watched her play that day, and I think she beat the field average by something like 12 shots. It was extraordinary to watch her mastery that week. So she will be missed. I think she was such a fun player to be able to watch and play against while I was out there. But again, 18 years of professional golf, I admire anybody that has made it that long in this sport.
As a viewer and someone who's covered her, I will miss her. And also Lorena Ochoa. I have found myself saddened by some of these early retirements in Europe. Maybe this isn't early. Maybe this is in the sweet spot, mid-30s, aiming. But I will miss her, and I feel like I couldn't possibly contemplate and understand the pressure of being a young woman from a foreign country, coming over here, trying to compete, learn the language, assimilate into this lifestyle and perform at the highest level, and how much of a toll that could take on someone.
And it was interesting in the statement how often she referred to this idea of searching for happiness. And it's probably one of the great under-focused on stories in professional golf is the mental health struggles that go along even for the successful. We talk about it all the time with people who are struggling with their game and looking for some kind of career traction. It also happens to those who've had a great deal of success. Bubba Watson's a perfect example of that, who's willing to talk openly about the feeling that you're missing something out there and that golf isn't giving that to you anymore.
Well, it's been a terrific career. We wish Na-Yun Choi the best in her second act. Paige, thanks so much. We'll speak to you soon.